camera. Action, folks. Murray throws. Touchdown, Arizona. DeAndre Hopkins. Quarterback draw. Murray, can he get there? Touchdown! Perfect!
Welcome to episode 150 of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. Yep, you've heard it right. 150 episodes of the best Arizona Cardinals podcast outside of Arizona, probably. I mean, I'm sure someone will differ to that, but we'll take the credit, won't we, when we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, happy episode 150, Tom.
Happy episode 150. Here's to 150 more.
Yeah, possibly. And hopefully, you know, when we do get to episode 300, we can have a win to talk about. But unfortunately, it's not going to happen this week. The Cardinals didn't get the memo that we were planning on celebrating.
Yeah, we have to make do with another Misery Monday to record this one on our fifth of the season.
Fifth Misery Monday of the season, and a special spooky Halloween Misery Monday this week as well.
Yeah, I mean, we should have probably done some for Halloween as well, but, you know, should we dress up just quickly with whatever we got next to us?
I've got a pineapple, so I'm going to be SpongeBob. There we go.
I've got a pizza hoodie next to me, so maybe I could put that on and then scare people. Put that on the wrong way around. Be weird.
Perfect. All right. Now that we're suitably festive, we can get on with this week's episode. Starting off with, we both had a quick look there to try and see if there was any news before we started recording, and there was none, which I suppose means that there'll be some absolutely massive news as soon as we finish.
Well, yeah, I mean, NFL trade deadline day is tomorrow, so with the Cardinals hope maybe in the market for someone or maybe getting rid of someone, you know, there will be some news possibly today or tomorrow, but, you know.
Yeah.
If it breaks our recording, we'll talk about it. If not, then you'll have to wait till next week.
I mean, I know for sure that people on Twitter and Reddit are desperate to get us to trade away Isaiah Simmons, but that seems to me to be just waving a gigantic white flag. You know, that's like admitting defeat and saying that we're going to go into another 10-year rebuild.
That's literally like the dumbest idea ever, though, isn't it? Like, you know, he started to find his feet and people want to get rid of him for what? A third round draft pick, I saw in one stupid article.
Yeah, and like the great thing is as well is that like he's starting to find his feet in such a way that you just know that he's actually going to be quite cheap to pick up when he does come around, because he's been, you know, so inconsistent to this point. So he's not going to be worth anything if we trade him away, and he's going to be cheap to re-sign. So I don't see the upside to getting rid of him.
There is no upside at all. And it just, like you say, it's like waving the white flag and it's calling quits on a guy who's, what, 2 years, 3 years into his NFL career. And, like, he started to figure it out this year, I seem. And, like, last year he had a decent enough year. So, like, why get rid of him right now? It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, and, you know, like, especially in a week when he got a pretty key sack as well. It's kind of just it's an odd choice. It's not a very well thought out one, in my opinion.
Neither is the one where people say, you know, maybe they should get rid of JJ Watt, because, like, why?
I mean, that one I have a little bit more sympathy for, because, you know, JJ Watt can't have that much left in the tank. But again, it's down to what you're going to get for him, right? And, like, he might not have that much left in the tank, but he's still playing well now. And it's not like you're going to get some young superstar for him that's going to play for us for the next 7-8 years, right? You know, if you're going to get anything, you're going to get like a mid-round draft pick, or maybe two, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably all you would be able to get, wouldn't it? Like a day two pick, maybe a day three pick as well, just to sweeten the deal. But again, it makes no sense. Like, the Cardinals are 3-5 now after, spoiler alert, they lost this past week. But they're in the NFC and, you know, no one seems to be running away with it behind Philadelphia. So, you know, there's still playoff spots up for grabs, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, exactly. This is it could definitely be something that could swing, you know. And if you look at, I don't know, for example, the start that the Seahawks got off to, they had a horrible little run in the kind of the first half of the season so far. And then they picked it up, and now all of a sudden they're leading the NFC West. You know, it's very easily sort of flipped. And just, so, yeah, I think getting rid of JJ Watt at this point for the sake of draft picks later, yeah, what does that gain you?
Seahawks leading the West, you know, just as everyone predicted.
Yeah, I know, right. Geno Smith led Seahawks, just destroying everyone as far as we can see.
Well, hopefully you don't this next week because, you know, we'll talk about that a bit later on though, won't we?
Absolutely, another Seahawks game. So soon after the first, it feels like not that long since the last one, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was only a couple of weeks ago, so, you know, at least we can, like, rehash old material. Yeah, you know, people won't notice a difference.
Yeah, exactly. Quick turnaround. But yeah, I mean, I think the only sort of trade that I saw people floating that I would be happy with would be trading out AJ Green, because he's really doing nothing for us at the moment. But again, the question becomes, like, what do you get in return? You know, what's the upside to getting rid of him other than him just not being around anymore, I suppose?
Yeah, to be honest, I'd take a conditional seventh round pick in 2047 if it meant getting rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not done much. And I mean, looking at him this week, one target with no catches, no nothing. Although he was up against, you know, shutdown cornerback Patrick Peterson, I suppose. So,
yeah, I mean, you got to take that into consideration. I mean, you know, P2 shut him down the whole game, you know, dominated him.
Kept AJ Green, our famously active wide receiver, nice and quiet.
And he shut down Robbie Anderson as well. Don't forget that part, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The guy who's learning the playbook.
Yeah, and he's basically just running go routes at the moment anyway. So, yeah whatever, dickhead.
Anyway, we'll get on to talking about the Vikings. I guess we might as well get on to talking about the Vikings game now.
Do you think we need that again?
No, we don't need to restart the episode, but we can get on to talking about the Vikings game because, it is yet another loss. The Cardinals traveled up to US Bank Stadium and came away 34-26, worse off. But, you know, it's a game that scoreline makes it sound a lot more out of reach than it really was. You know, I think this is a game that was in hand and then was lost, really.
I mean, we should start off by, you know, basically beginning, like, how weird it was to play at 6. Well, it wasn't even 6 o'clock, was it? Because with the clocks moving again this weekend, we ended up kicking off at 5 o'clock UK time. And, yeah, you know, that's just weird in itself.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think this is our first early window game this year, right?
It is, yeah. But, I think we haven't got... We've got possibly one more, I think, isn't it? Atlanta?
Yeah, we're surprisingly short on them this year, actually. But which I'm glad for because, you know, I don't actually particularly enjoy them like that. I feel like it's I miss my like run up to the football. I miss watching my couple hours of red zone before we get stuck into the Cardinals game.
Yeah, who doesn't love a bit of Scott Hansen? And you know, we had to forego him this week, which is a shame as always. But yeah, Cardinals kicked off at 5 o'clock, and by what was it, like quarter past, 20 past, they were behind 7-0.
Yeah, it was about 5 minutes game clock into the game. Minnesota managed to score already, and you know, very slow start, I guess, by the defense on this one. I mean, kind of, I don't know. I think there was a third down in there somewhere, but it felt like they were marching up the field with no problem, and just a couple big breakaway plays here and there.
Yeah, and then to make it worse, it was capped off by a 20-odd-yard run by Kirk Cousins, you know, the famously mobile and athletic Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. I mean, this team does not look like a team that's quarterbacked by Kirk Cousins, does it?
I mean, to be fair, Kirk Cousins isn't a terrible quarterback. Like, no, you know,
he's not.
There's plenty worse than him in the league.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of the time when we think about Kirk Cousins, we're thinking back to his, like, I don't know, his Washington days, for example, which is not exactly like a highlight of his career. But yeah, you know, they were pretty efficiently moving offense on us. And I think that the, you know, obviously kind of going down 7-0 straight away sort of set us into a tough position.
Yeah, I mean, especially when the offense came into the game underhanded as it was, because, you know, they were without, again, Rodney Hudson at center, meaning Billy Price lined up there. And they were also down DJ Humphries as well.
Yeah, it's the whole offensive line is beginning to look a bit sort of ramshackle there, really. It's yeah, it's starting to be a bit of a worry in terms of kind of longevity for the season. I know there's not huge amounts of hope left in the season, I guess, but you know, there's without a good offensive line, it's definitely not going to like look so good.
I mean, to be fair, like obviously the right side seems to be unaffected so far, but yeah. But Price is a bit of downgrade from Hudson, and you know, we had Josh Jones in at left tackle instead of Humphries, and Humphries has obviously been like arguably the best offensive lineman we've had this year.
Yeah, oh, I would say kind of undoubtedly, to be honest. I mean, yeah, Humphries is like beyond just being the face of the offensive line, he's definitely, you know, consistently the highest rated for all of the various ratings mean. And definitely, you know, like one of the more solid options there.
Yeah, so obviously with the offensive line being down a bit, you know, it was a bit of a struggle on offense, like obviously giving Kyler Murray time to get the ball. But when he did, once again, he had DeAndre Hopkins out there, you know, making plays as only DeAndre Hopkins can.
Yeah, I mean, this is another game where for me, I was looking at it and I was thinking, man, what could have been? You know, you think if we'd had Hopkins those first six games of the year, particularly some of the ones that we lost that were a bit close, and you know, he's out there, you know, against a pretty tough Vikings team, picking up 12 receptions for 160 yards
and a touchdown. You know, which we'll obviously talk about in a bit, but yeah. I suppose we shouldn't, you know. Along with those stat lines, he did also win the British Bird Grand Prix Down Player of the Game award from the game.
Pretty
solid.
It was
solid, pretty one-sided as well.
Yeah. I think it was interesting seeing JJ Watt in with a shout. But yeah, I think, you know, given the touchdown grab that we'll talk about in a bit, and given the fact that he, you know, realistically, he doubled the yardage of the next closest receiver, he was, you know, unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair as well, Rondale Moore had quite a good game. Like, you know, when they actually started using him a bit more, like, down the field, you know, he made some big plays and, you know, arguably one of his best games since that time he scored a 70-odd yard touchdown against Minnesota last year.
Yeah, but I would also say the nice thing about Rondale Moore's game is that he was so relatively consistent. You know, 7 receptions on 8 targets for 92 yards and a touchdown. Not bad.
I mean, wasn't Hopkins as well? I think he was 12 for 13, wasn't he? I think
he was 12 for 13. And to be fair, Zach Ertz was 4 for 5. You know, like that's a pretty good set up top, really.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Hopkins as well, it could have been 13 for 13. You know, he was just desperately unlucky to drop that ball. Because,
yeah,
like, definitely. Whenever does DeAndre Hopkins drop a ball, that's just when you know it's not your day.
Yeah, that being said, you know, this first drive was kind of showing that it wasn't the Cardinals' day, right? Because first quarter, we came away with 3 points after, you know, a sort of fairly promising movement of the ball for a little while. But in the kind of theme of the day, a couple of silly mistakes here and there, a couple penalties, and all of a sudden we're needing to kick a field goal instead of drive down for a touchdown.
Yeah, and I suppose we should mention as well the fact that in this game we had two kickers active. We had both Rodrigo Blankenship and Matt Prater return to action as well.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time the Cardinals had more than one kicker active, but I guess they maybe just wanted to make sure that they had the backup for Prater should he need it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was Blankenship holding, like, he was doing all the kickoffs and stuff, and he had Prater coming out for the extra points and field goals, even though, you know, he seemed like he could barely move, but he still managed to score, like, a 44-yard touchdown, field goal, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it's really impressive, and, like, it is good to have that safe pair of hands. But yeah, it's an interesting setup, I would say.
Yeah, and then obviously the Cardinals, you know, just basically the story of the game was they just couldn't really protect Kyler Murray. Like, he took too many sacks, you know, he was getting hurried way too quickly. Like, He literally had no chance at all whatsoever. So, to be honest, to see the numbers that he did actually put up in the game, you know, really it's a credit to him, like, of what sort of a talent he actually is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, especially if it's the left side of your offensive line that's weak, as a right-handed quarterback, that means that you constantly got to be expecting somebody coming from behind you, which is obviously not a good feeling. So, yeah, just again, like, I think it's impressive that the Cardinals managed to get going what they did. But yeah, as you said, like a story of not protecting Kyler Murray and then also throwing away things with a few stupid mistakes here and there.
Yeah, I mean, there were far too many opportunities in that. Well, far too many times in that game, you could see just like from still pictures where like the offensive line were like 4 or 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Like the Vikings had just bullied them backwards. So like Kyler literally had nowhere to go except down.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just watching that, you know, for the full game, again, like the nice thing was is that it sort of came in fits and starts, which allowed the offense to build up momentum here and there. Which obviously did, you know, again, like it's not like the Cardinals were absolutely outclassed here, right? They still scored 26 points. They in fact led the game going into the fourth quarter, or at least at some point in the third, rather. So, you know, it was a game that was very winnable should a few things have gone differently.
Yeah, I mean, again, like they did start off pretty poorly on defense because, like, Dalvin Cook was just running all over them, wasn't he? Like, I think he had like 60, 70 yards possibly in the first quarter alone.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of, I guess, what broke the defense in the first place. And it's definitely, you know, we were talking about Kirk Cousins being able to get his touchdown there and his rushing touchdown, or rather his big rush to set it up. But yeah, I mean, all of that was facilitated by just a real kind of inability to stop the run there. Dalvin Cook going for 111 yards overall, but averaging 5.6, which is really where the damage gets done, right? Because that's what gets your downs ticking over, is when you can just keep that run batting in.
Yeah, I mean, he did manage to break the 100 yards, didn't he, for the first time this season. Yeah,
he got 111 yards, yeah.
And then on the other hand, like, they had Justin Jefferson, who seemed to have, like, the quietest, like, 98-yard game ever.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's funny because, like, you know, he had that one big 30-yard catch, but then the rest of it was made up with, you know, quite a few smaller ones, just... yeah, it didn't feel like he was that in the game, but you look at the stat line and it would suggest that he was like pretty all over it.
I would be interested to see the breakdown of what his stats were like, you know, when he was guarded by Byron Murphy, because I think he was moved around a lot, wasn't he? So he wasn't necessarily always marked by Murphy.
Yeah, yeah, it was an odd setup that they were playing, and I wonder if it was partially to kind of force that to happen. Not that we've got any, you know, star, like superstar defensive backs that they would be trying to like confuse and everything like that. But yeah, it's interesting as well that he was only targeted 8 times, given how prevalent he's been for the Vikings and the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, like Adam Thielen had a few catches here and there, and KJ Osborne had a touchdown catch, but basically most of the damage was done on the ground more than anything.
Again, yeah, like that's what kept the downs ticking over, and then, you know, just like the occasional pass. There was no big giant highlight moments, I feel, for their offense.
No, I wouldn't say so, no. Like, they weren't really that impressive touchdowns. Like, they didn't have like a one-hander like DeAndre Hopkins did at the end of the first half.
I would say like this one sort of breaks the pattern, right? Because like our pattern has been making superstars anonymous, right? And like Dalvin Cook was definitely not anonymous, and Justin Jefferson, like, yeah, he didn't have any like highlight moments, but he still caught for 98 yards and you know, kind of kept them moving. So I'd say this one breaks with the, you know, that tradition that the Cardinals have had for the past little while anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it was a decent enough first half for the Cardinals, you know, like they did go in trailing, but the fact that, you know, they did get the ball to start the second half because they deferred, you know. You see why they do that, don't they?
I think that getting a touchdown in the second quarter, you know, like that's where you've got your sort of feeling like, okay, we're only 4 points behind, we get the ball back. Yeah, you know, I can, there was like definitely some hope in the air there, right? It didn't feel like the Cardinals were being totally outclassed. It felt like a winnable game for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, before the break, they were able to actually block a field goal attempt as well to keep it 14-10.
Yeah, I forgot about the blocked field goal, actually. That's a sort of huge advantage going in. Like, it's always nice to go into a half having just done something really, like, exciting and useful for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, obviously helps probably change halftime tactics and all that, you know, because...
Oh, yeah.
Possibly they were going in like 17-10 down, but instead it's only 14-10, and they're getting the ball to start the second half. So, you know, it's an ideal situation to be in, you know, like having back-to-back, well, not quite back-to-back scoring possession, is it? Because they did have the ball, but, you know, they scored, they didn't score, but then you have a chance to kick off the second half and possibly take the lead at some point.
Yeah, it means that you can control the cadence going in. And, you know, the third quarter was... pretty successful for the Cardinals, picking up two touchdowns, but failing to convert a 2-point conversion on the second.
Yeah, I mean the second half didn't start well at all, especially for one Trey McBride. Not ideal when like the first two plays out of the half are like he gets flagged for one thing, and then the very next play he gets flagged again for holding. So, you know, it just gets you into that stupid like whatever. Second and like forever,
and yeah.
No one's going to be able to pick that up.
Yeah, I was going to say like it's. I think when you get that double penalty, I'd be interested to see, you know, how many out of everyone who's been in those situations, how many of them actually managed to convert it, because it must be so low that it's almost not worth trying. You know, like the real question then is about getting into as good a field position as possible to punt, almost, rather than, you know, getting the first down.
Yeah, I mean, like, for as bad as the offense was, though, the defense just came out and played ridiculously well, especially on that first drive, because it was over in three plays. We had a tackle for loss from Dalvin Cook, then Zaven Collins deflected the pass that Marco Wilson was almost able to pick off, and then J.J. Watt and several other Cardinals crushed Kirk Cousins for a sack, you know, just to get the ball back pretty much straight away.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, that sort of thing is the kind of play that that allowed us to take the lead at any point in this game. It's the kind of thing that kept us in the game. And that's, I think, like, with both the offense and the defense, that was something that we saw was fits and starts of a really, really great football team. But then, you know... you've got the stuff like giving away big penalties like that and giving away interceptions as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things with the Cardinals, like, you know, it seems to be like the thing we hope for is that the defense is able to keep the game close, which for most of the point they are able to do so. It's just a case of the offense putting together some scoring drives and, you know, actually taking advantage of what the defense are able to do. And for some parts of this game, they were able to do that, but it just wasn't enough over the course of the game to actually win the game because, like we say, there's been too many like mistakes here and there from one player, you know, bad call, you know, missed penalties, whatever, you know, it just seemed to go against the Cardinals.
Yeah, you know, they're just basically unable to keep up at that point, you know, with a... And let's not forget, again, like, this is a Minnesota team that's 6-1, right? It's not... This isn't a bad team or a mediocre team. This is a pretty good team who's... looking a hell of a lot like they're going to win their division. I don't know. It's you can't take your foot off the gas in that situation, right? You've got to be able to be scored every time you get up into the red zone, not settling for a field goal twice. And you know the going for two, I understand why it was done. At the end of the day, that was also just leaving a point on the table that we could have done with in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the Cardinals were able to take the lead after that play because, you know, a couple of big catches by DeAndre Hopkins, as always, and Zach Ertz made it into the end zone to take a 17-14 lead in the third.
I did enjoy that play when the there was somebody in the stands shouted that's a touchdown loud enough for it to be picked up on the main broadcast.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Isn't that like, I remember that part, yeah. There was, you know, someone heckling the crowd, wasn't it, or something?
I think it was just somebody in the crowd happened to be, you know, have like a microphone pointed up at them or near them or something like that. And just, you know, shouted, that's a touchdown. And on top of that, obviously, if it's a an away touchdown in an actually in a stadium where the home team's fans are the main attendees, then it's obviously going to be a bit quieter at that point. But I just thought it was quite funny to have that, you know, pop up on the like national broadcast.
Yeah. And then unfortunately, the Vikings were able to reply back with a touchdown of their own to make it 21-17. And we get our like stupid mistake from Kyler Murray, which the Vikings took full advantage of.
Yeah, this is the giant lobbing pass right up to midfield, right?
That's the one. Yeah, you know,
this is like
pick it off. It's like, I mean, we see it so many times with Kyler, don't we? Like, you know, go in for it all when he could easily just take a short pass and keep the drive alive, but no.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know what it is. And, you know, we're kind of seeing it come back a little bit where that had all kind of disappeared. Like, this was something that we were seeing in year one and year two, Kyler. And then in year three, it all kind of, you know, that kind of stuff stopped. But I don't know, I'm seeing it kind of creeping back in here, this, like, just throw it up the field and kind of hope that you get a Hollywood moment, as it were.
Yeah, but wasn't to be this time because it was picked off. And then they scored another touchdown to make it 28-17. Perhaps you should stay off the Call of Duty game because, you know, that's all what he does these days.
Well, we did see a few people dropping some gamer celebrations on him, didn't we?
I mean, should we talk about that dickhead now or not? Stupid Patrick Meterson.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, let's have a moan about him here, and then we can move on, maybe even forever, as long as he's retired by next time we go there.
Actually, no, because we could talk about the next couple of plays because he was actually in the middle of both of them, wasn't he?
Yeah, good point.
Because you know, the Cardinals, Rondale Moore, you know, famously they just use him on their, like, those stupid screen passes, don't they? Allegedly.
Supposedly, except this time.
Yeah, this time, like, he has a big gain where he, like, had he broken one more tackle, he could have gone for a touchdown. But then, like, a couple of plays later, you know, he takes it 38 yards after breaking several tackles. And, like, did you see his shirt breaking?
His undershirt. Well, they're shirts that are designed to tear away like that, aren't they?
Yeah. Like, and there was someone clinging on, someone we know very well.
Yeah, indeed. One Patrick Peterson attempting to make the stop and then just unable to.
What a shame to see him on the floor. Not that I'm like highlighting, like get it framed and put in a frame and all that.
Do you know what?
Dream of doing it.
I think as much as it's like funny to see Patrick Peterson lying on the floor after being unable to make a stop, which it is very funny. I think that the actual moment here that's more worthy of talking about is some of the, like, really good moments that we've seen from Rondale Moore in this past sort of year and kind of how good a player he's turning into. And I think, you know, just that this game is real proof of that thing of, like, if you just get him out of running those damn screen passes all the time, he can really make an impact.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we saw it in the Minnesota game last year, didn't we? When he was wide open for his 70-odd yard touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's, he's got speed. He's got safe hands. I mean, maybe it's down to matchups and play style and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think the guy is, like, exciting to watch and like, really kind of turning into a big talent. And I would quite like to see him being used more in a proper way in, hopefully not, you know, hopefully instead of him, some other team realizing he's a much better talent than we're using him for.
I mean, the thing is, though, like, you say you want to see him used more, but everyone wants to see DeAndre Hopkins used more. Everyone wants to see Zach Ertz used more. Everyone wants to see Hollywood Brown used more. Everyone wants to see Greg Dortch used more. Like, there's only so many passes that go around every game.
It's very true, yeah. Maybe the thing that everyone wants to see more is fewer bubble screens and bootleg passes and things like that. You know, make it a bit more of a dynamic downfield passing game, which is also clearly what Kyler wants, given some of the ways that he's just throwing it away. So maybe we just need a different scheme with some more exciting passing.
Yeah. But I mean, I suppose we should talk about the player who ended up on the turf in that play, and you know.
Go on then. I know you want to.
I mean, everyone's seen the videos of him now, haven't you? You know, chatting his shit, you know.
Yeah.
There's one of him, like, I've seen it a couple of times. He's out on the field, like, looking for Steve Keim. Like, he wants to speak to Steve, like, what's going to do to him? You know, come on. Just makes him look like a dickhead.
Yeah. I did hear a story this week. It's the first time I've heard it, where apparently while he was at the Cardinals, someone was printing out fan emails about how bad he was and leaving them on his on the chair in his locker.
Can't complain. Like, I can't confirm or deny whether or not those emails were sent by myself.
I mean, especially you remember the last couple of years he was with us, he just was not playing. Like, he had those couple of seasons when he really was, you know, maybe not quite defensive MVP candidate, but he was certainly up there in terms of the conversations about defensive MVP and things. And then, just kind of dissolved into nothingness after his PED allegations, interestingly, caught up with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a strange way for him to act, isn't it? You know, considering how he was in his final couple of years with Arizona. Like, you know, I did see a tweet about it. Let me see if I can find that about. Because it was basically saying, like, he's the one who wanted the trade away from Arizona. He's the one who wanted to...
Well, I don't know if you remember that, but he was... There was a couple of seasons during the offseason when that was the big rumor, right? It was like, oh, P2's asked for a trade away. And then I think one of the seasons he was even late showing up to camp because he wanted a trade away like that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we all, you know, because he was a decent player, we, like, turned a blind eye to his antics and his bullshit. But, you know, now he's not a Cardinal. We can completely, like, rip and, like, point out how much of a big bellend he is because... That's all he is, really. I just can't stand the guy. He's just so arrogant. He's so... It's all me, me, me. Like, you see, there's one video he put out on his own social media. Like, he did nothing in that game. It was pretty much his teammates that won the game.
Yeah,
and
I mean...
Like, he's there acting like it's me, me, me all the time. It's like, it's not. It's a team game, and there's no I in team.
Absolutely. It's also... It's an awful lot of talk from somebody who is essentially a cornerback to... You know, four tackles he made in that game.
Yeah, three pass breakups apparently, but you know, one of them was to AJ Green, who isn't... I don't even think he's an actual player these days, is he?
No, I mean, it's like it was something like way down the read option, and yeah, again, like he may have broken up three passes, but there's nine pass breakups across the team as well, right? So it's an interesting thing to see him still treating it as a revenge game as well, especially given that it's been what, like 3+ years since he played for us.
I mean, Steve Keim hasn't called him in those years, so maybe that'll end everything. Steve Keim's not gonna call him at all.
Well, I mean, I think especially given the way that he's been acting, I think if Steve Keim called him, it would just be abuse that would be coming down the other end of the line, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll call Patrick Peterson if you want. I've got a few choice words for him. I mean, it's funny, though. Like, apparently on his podcast, you know, because he has a podcast these days. I actually used to listen to his podcast because it was interesting. But now I don't listen to it at all. I've, like, unsubscribed. That'll show him.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be feeling that.
But yeah, on that this week, he was saying, like, he's going to have two picks in this game. And how many picks did he have in this game?
Yeah, exactly. No picks, no big... I am glad out of the picks that we did see that he wasn't featured in either of them, because that would have just been insufferable.
Yeah, I mean, he did get his part in the touchdown celebration, but, you know, who cares? He didn't do anything.
Exactly.
Just yeah. As you can tell, I'm not a fan of Patrick Peterson anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what. Shall we move on before you give yourself an aneurysm, and just talk about how this game ended, and then sweep it under the rug, because after taking a a more substantial lead in the third quarter. Minnesota led us into the fourth, where Arizona got one more field goal. And that was really all she wrote for the offense. I felt, you know, it kind of it sparked out after that missed 2-point attempt.
I mean, the thing is, as well from this game, did you notice it took until the fourth quarter till they mentioned somebody?
I was so ready for them to have not mentioned it the whole time. But they must have been following your Twitter feed to keep up with the latest interesting news.
I don't think they actually mentioned the fact that he was a ball boy, just the fact Larry Fitzgerald was from Minnesota. I mean, I didn't really catch it all because my stream sort of like came halfway through and I just heard them say Larry Fitzgerald. So it was like, oh, they finally mentioned him.
They've finally done it, yeah. Well, maybe, you never know, maybe next time we play them in another 2 to 4 years, that'll finally be it. It'll finally be over.
Yeah, and I mean, the Vikings did, like, it was, what was the score going into?
Going into the fourth.
Yeah, so we scored the field goal. 28
to 23, I think, at that point. Yeah, 28 to 23.
28-26 it was after Prater got his second field goal.
Yes, yeah, it would have been.
But then, like, the defense gets a stop and we get a... Yeah, we have to mention this part, don't we? Because it was a part where Greg Dortch couldn't field the punt and the Vikings recovered it.
Yeah, that's the one. Which
again,
is...
so these are silly mistakes by individual players, which cost us the game.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I feel for Greg Dortch in that regard because, you know, otherwise he was having like an okay game to himself, like a couple receptions, couple decent like catches there, being kind of useful here and there. But then obviously, yeah, losing a fumble at just the wrong moment and going from a game that, again, this was a game at that point that was, I'd say pretty firmly in reach, you know, like a reasonable chance of winning that, to very rapidly getting out of our hands.
Well, no, I mean, it was a 2-point game. So, you know, we get the stop there. We get the ball back, kick a field goal. We're taking a 29-28 lead, aren't we?
No, for like, I mean, mathematically it's close. Yeah. But like, I mean, just generally the feel of it is that we could have been able to score and hold on to a win at that point.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, though, with this game, it just stayed close throughout the entirety of it. Like, I mean, I know they had the two after the interceptions. They did score two touchdowns in, like, back-to-back possessions.
Yeah.
But that was basically where the biggest lead was. Other than that, it was a one-score game either way.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly didn't feel like 5-1 team hosting a 3-4 team, did it?
No, exactly. You know, like, we definitely held our own against this Minnesota team. And, you know, on another day, we'd have beaten them easily.
Yeah,
well, not easily, but, like, we could have actually won that game.
Yeah. Again, like, I think, you know, we're talking about it being kind of down to those individual mistakes. But, yeah, individual mistakes combined with, like, a few, I don't know, lapses in momentum here and there, and all of a sudden it just all gets away from you.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the Vikings scored another touchdown to make it 34-26.
34-26, final but, score, yeah.
But they did miss the extra point, which kept it as an 8-point differential, so still a one-score game, and the Cardinals still had a chance to, like, tie the game.
Yeah, and the clock was pretty decent at that point, really.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, though, like, as I said on Twitter last night during the game, it's just possibly gearing up. So Cardinals march down the field, score a touchdown, and then miss the 2-point conversion and lose 34-32.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we'd already missed a 2-point conversion earlier in that game as well. So this is where I was talking about, you know, the choice to go for the 2-point conversion there. Like, again, I understand why at the time it would have put us within 3 points rather than within 4 points. But at this point in the game, instead of, you know, marching down and needing a touchdown and the 2-point conversion, we would have needed a touchdown and a field goal to tie it or a 2-point conversion to win it. Which is, you know, that's a bit of a difference at that point. And I know
the fourth quarter itself was just bonkers. You know, like the Cardinals kept it close, and they had the opportunities to go and down the field, but then they made the mistakes which stopped them from doing so.
Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden, you know, it goes from a first down with everything to look forward to a fumble and lost balls and Kyler getting sacked and all of that stuff, and the game just ends with no fanfare at all, really.
Yeah. I mean, like you say, the Cardinals had the opportunities, like, but then Kyler throws his second pick of the game when Zach Ertz was going away from where it was supposed to be. But then the defense gets the ball back, J.J. Watt with his second sack of the game, and then DeAndre Hopkins doing what DeAndre Hopkins does. But again, they can't convert, and Vikings get the ball back. And then the off defense, you know, they have Isaiah Simmons making the big play, and the Cardinals get another chance. We're under 2 minutes and no timeouts left, obviously, because it's that part of the game.
Yeah, but I mean, that's it. You know, you get to this point and it's chance after chance after chance, and it's just, you know, they kind of keep throwing it away, I guess. And like, I know part of this isn't just like just the offense doing poorly or whatever. Like the Minnesota defense as a broad unit are a good team. And they were doing their job pretty well at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I saw on Twitter before, like, the Vikings have, like, a top five defensive line. And, like, the two, like, as a offensive tackle pairing, they're also top five. So, you know, they've obviously built lines like you're supposed to. And it's definitely showing this part, like, this late into games when they need them both to, like, basically get them over the finish line.
Yeah, including, you know, big stamina at that point, right? You know, and yeah, you know, it finishes in the way of one of those games where you just say, oh, well, it wasn't to be, you know, like that was the energy I was getting out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help as well that the fact the game ended on back-to-back sacks of Kyler Murray.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
with the clock expiring, basically, well, the clock running on both of them and then expiring as he's hitting the ground for the second time.
Yeah, and this is kind of like where that offensive line stamina comes in, right? That's just our offensive line looking completely gassed. And I think, you know, especially after you give up one sack at that point, it's fair to make it feel hopeless, I guess.
Yeah, and obviously full-time whistle brings out the Firekind Brigade, as always.
Yeah, I don't think it helps at this point that, you know, the Cardinals are now bottom of the NFC West with by far the highest points against at 210, but also the second highest points for, which is, you know, it's just going to show that we're kind of not finding ways to win games despite the fact that we've been in it a lot.
Yeah, but that's the thing though, like the NFC is still pretty close, and you know, 3-5 is still possibly enough at the moment, at least for. Well, maybe not actually, because the NFC East is just... I mean, the NFC East is weird, isn't it, this year? Like, 7-0 Eagles, Cowboys and Giants are both 6-2. And then Washington's 4-4. Like, what's going on there?
It's a bit like the NFC West was a few years ago, isn't it? Just a, you know, sort of bit of a powerhouse division.
You must have an easy schedule, that's all it is.
Yeah, clearly.
Not that they're any good, clearly, yeah.
Yeah.
There
we go. Cardinals, bottom of the NFC West. But as you alluded to, two games swing away from sitting on top, with clearly the scoring power to be able to do it, you know. And hopefully, you know, well, actually, sort of statistically, an easier schedule for the kind of second half of the season.
I mean, it depends what you look at, because some places now say the Cardinals have like a really tough second half of the season, but then others say, you know, it's not. So I guess we'll just have to see, won't we, the rest of the way?
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk about the Cardinals' upcoming game against top of the division Seattle in a few moments. But until then, and as a brief aside from real football, how'd you get on in fantasy this week, Tom?
I mean, I bounced back pretty well this week because both in the Birdland Bowl and the Dynasty League, I put together two wins, two nice. Pretty convincing wins.
Okay, I'd take that.
Yep. So in the Bird Gang Bowl, I mean, I've still got a player to play tonight, but it doesn't make any difference because I've won. Well, I've scored 155.92 to 112.7. Big performances from Ramondre Stevenson, Jalen Waddle, DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, nice, both nice. All them scoring like 20-odd, 30 points each. Can't complain at that.
I'm sure we've covered this on this podcast before, but what's the highest ever negative score that a player's posted on Fantasy?
What do you mean, like negative points?
Yeah, yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, you're saying that I've already won, that I've still got someone to play.
No
one would ever score negative 30 points, but...
I'd take him out of the team if I have to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, usually maybe like minus two or minus three because like...
I think I've seen a minus five before, but yeah, if anybody's having that bad a game, they would just be sent home, right?
I think the only one you would probably see score that badly would be like a defense, like a DST.
Yeah.
You know, if
yeah.
they have like no sacks, no picks, and like 60 odd points put up on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think I've maybe seen a DST score some pretty significant negative points. But yeah, you seem safe there anyway.
Yeah. And in the Dynasty League, a week fresh from considering maybe blowing the whole team up, I managed to score over 200 points. And
pretty solid, yeah.
I know. I mean, I was helped by Derrick Henry scoring 35, Jacoby Myers 22, and Donta Foreman, who I picked up like when we were playing the Saints, because obviously the news came out about McCaffrey being traded.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he picked up 31 points. So nice.
Yeah.
I'll take that. I mean, I'm still like near the foot of the table, but it is what it is.
Sometimes it's nice to know that your team's got it in them, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, last week I had like 220 put on me, so
yeah.
This week the boot's on the other foot, and I'm not sorry to my opponent.
Well, this week I've definitely got two unsettled games, I would say, at this point. In the Bird Gang Bowl, I'm behind in Dynasty. Oh, no, sorry. In Dynasty, I'm behind. In Bird Gang Bowl, I'm behind. So Dynasty, I need about 30 points from Joe Burrow. And in the Bird Gang Bowl, I need Burrow and Higgins to combine for less than 30 points. So I think there's no way that I'm getting out of this game without a loss in one of them. But it depends on how much Joe Burrow scores which one.
I've just had a look on the Dynasty League. We've had someone score 255 points this week. Whoa. And I thought I did well.
We need to go in and check what our highest ever points total is, because I think somebody's done about 280 before.
I mean, that's easy enough to find, because it's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, that is actually the highest points ever in one
week. Is it really 255?
Yeah, because, I mean, 2020, we had a team score 241.
Nice.
2019, you had a team score 227 points in a week.
Yeah, that was the year I won it, I think.
Yeah, don't rub it in. Yeah, that's the year I won it. All right, for some. I mean, you won't win it this year. Neither will I.
Not going to happen.
What about Pickham?
Pickham, I scored a solid 7, which is, you know, a little over half, considering that we're into bye week territory now.
Yeah, I managed to beat that with 8, with the Bengals to play tonight. So hopefully yeah. 9 points.
So you're extending your lead a little bit. But yeah, I think this coming week's got a few more predictable plays, or at least more predictable than the Premier League's been or whatever, so hopefully I can get a nice, you know, like safe number in there.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the British Bird Gang League on the Pick'em League, and the top position is on 76 points, which is 10 ahead of me, which, you know, yeah, that's not ideal.
I think I'm on 64, so yeah.
You want to be bottom at least, that's one thing.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there we go. That's all of the fantasy round the league. Meanwhile, hoping for a fantasy compared to last time we played them, the Cardinals are going into a game against the top of the division Seahawks. Another tough one coming up, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, especially with the news that I've just seen on Twitter that Rodney Hudson is again going to be out of the game.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think we kind of knew that, really, didn't we? Or we kind of expected it. But yeah, that's that's tough going for the offensive line. And offensive line, obviously, famously something that's hard to patch up mid-season. You know, even if you were to go ahead and sell the farm and go and get some good talent. And number one, there's no good talent walking around. And number two, you know, getting somebody into the right scheme and who's in the right type of shape and everything. Really, really tough call. So hopefully we get him back, I believe, probably next week. But yeah, coming up against the Seahawks, not ideal.
No, especially with the Seahawks, the way they're playing. But I mean, again, it's not really that. I suppose time we did play them, we didn't have DeAndre Hopkins, so that's one new wrinkle to add.
Yeah, very true. But we did also have Hollywood Brown then as well, who was instrumental in keeping us going when we were going in that game, which, to be fair, wasn't very often.
Yeah. But, I mean, like you say, the Seahawks this year, you know, they get rid of Russell Wilson, bring in Geno Smith, and
make him play better than ever. Yeah. I mean, I will say, obviously, they got off to a really, really slow start. But now that they're going, now that they've got, you know, firing on all cylinders, Geno Smith has been looking absolutely brilliant. Obviously doing really well at running back as well, with Kenneth Walker looking like he might be offensive rookie of the year candidate as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's even without a few weeks of him not playing, because, you know, he had Rashad Penny in there.
Obviously he's picked up the mantle really well from him. And then we saw, you know, again, in our previous game with them, we saw, well, basically everyone on the receiving staff doing pretty well, except from DK Metcalf, who we kept relatively quiet.
Yeah, I mean, there was, like, the previous week, he did go off injured, was back on Sunday. Although I don't think he was, possibly wasn't 100%, because he didn't put up his usual kind of numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see against us, right? Because we, in theory, should be a team that he should excel against, because he's a big, tall, strong receiver, and we've got a load of short guys in the secondary.
Although we do have Byron Murphy, who kept him to, what, 2 catches last time?
Yeah. I mean, we kept him really quiet last time. Hopefully we can do the same again, but ultimately, what we saw last time was we kept him really quiet, and then guys like Marquise Goodwin and Noah Fant just caught everything instead.
Yeah. It's just one of those things, isn't it, with Cardinals? Like, you pick the poison you want to, like, try and stop, but then the others take advantage instead. So,
yeah, I mean, a lot of it is down to the depth that we have, right? You know, like, we've got this ability to shut guys down, but then we've got, you know, a complete loss of a big drop off in talent, I guess, from then on, and it that's really what shows.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, this Seahawks team, like, you know, they're top of the league. They're in a bit of a stride at the moment, but again, they've hardly had the best run of it this season, right? This isn't us going up against the Eagles again, who, by the way, we only lost to a little bit. We lost to the Eagles less badly than we lost to the Seahawks last time. But, you know, they're not an absolute powerhouse of a team. They are beatable, and you know, in some ways we looked better at them last time. Also, it's been a good couple of years since they've swept us in a season as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, let's just hope. I mean, it is in Arizona this time, so hopefully home field advantage we can. Well, you know, home field advantage, is that such a thing with Arizona? Yeah, I don't know.
I was going to say, we don't really have much of it. I wouldn't be surprised if the 12th man turned up in Arizona as well. But then again, you know, this is our second home game since we broke the home game duck. So maybe there'll be more people willing to come along to State Farm Stadium this time.
Yeah. I mean, is there really much more we can say about this game? Because, you know, we talked a lot about them last time, and, you know, don't think much has changed, really. Only the fact that we've got DeAndre Hopkins and we haven't got Marquise Brown. It's basically the same two teams playing.
I mean, I guess so. Like, I guess I could ask you, do you think this is a game that we've got much of a chance in? Do you think we can, this is a winnable one?
I think all games are winnable. Just have to stop with the stupid errors and, you know, execute, as Cliff Kingsbury likes to say.
Yeah, settle down. Again, like I think you know, if we're able to hold it that close against the 6-1 Vikings, in theory we should be able to hold it a lot closer against this Seahawks team. If not beat them, because the Vikings are a much better team than the Seahawks. So yeah, do that Cliff Kingsbury thing, get the execution right, get the stupid errors stopped. This is definitely a winnable game.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the spread at the moment, and it is my Cardinals -2. So, I mean, home field advantage, like we say, is always -3. So,
yeah.
Bookies are kind of slightly favouring Seattle, it seems.
But really not by much.
No. I mean, to be honest, Seattle +2. I mean, I wouldn't bet on it because, you know, I think the Cardinals will win anyway. But, I mean, I always think the Cardinals will win.
Yeah. No, I think I might predict them in for a win this week. I think you know, this isn't a game of you know, win and prove it. Particularly for me, this is a game of it should be winnable. It's possible, but you know, I won't be losing sleep over it if they don't.
Well, I mean, if they do lose it, they'll be what, 3-6, and you know.
Yeah, but
then what?
Yeah, I mean, if they win it, then that's a huge swing in the division, right? Because that's that puts us within one game of the top, essentially, depending on what else happens with the other teams. That
yeah, but I mean, like the Seahawks would then be like 5-4, we'd be 4-5, wouldn't we? So yeah,
actually, yeah, it would put us within one win of the top spot, kind of regardless of what everyone else does. So. That would be a good thing. And yeah, you're right. Like if it's a loss and it puts us to 3-6 on the season, that's, again, like I never like to say draw a line under it, that's the season over. It's a sort of halfway point, but you know, it definitely doesn't look good, does it?
No. So let's just go predicting the Cardinals to win. So, which is what I'm going to do.
Fair enough.
I'll say 28-26 just to keep Vegas happy.
Fair enough. I think I'm going to go for a 34-30 game.
In favour of the Cardinals?
In favour of the Cardinals, yeah.
Yeah, you see that. Hopefully they do win. And they are back to their normal 9:05 kickoff.
Yeah, I think that'll be good for, apart from anything else. Something we didn't really... Well, we spoke about it at the start of the Vikings game, but obviously Cardinals do traditionally a lot worse in those early spots because of, you know, jet lag and all that sort of stuff.
God, what a terrible... I've just looked at the slate of games for next week. There's two late games.
Oh, there's only two late games?
Yeah, there's us versus the Seahawks and the Rams against the Buccaneers.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, luckily that means that we should have a good slate of games, or at least all the good games are going to be in red zone as well.
Yeah, there's 8 in there. So Scott Hansen can have his Opto box out, so that's one thing at least.
Know, classic. But yeah, I guess we'll be back next week to talk about the Cardinals and the Seahawks Mark 2 for the season.
Yep, we will. So as always, thanks for listening to the British Birdgang Breakdown. If you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Birdgang. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/British Birdgang. And join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Birdgang. Buy British Birdgang merch at britishbirdgang.tmittle.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then leave us a review, wherever it is you get your podcast from. And so, yeah, that'll do it for this week's episode. So, end of episode 150. You know, if you've ever listened to the podcast, you know, thanks for listening to it over these however many years we've done it and however many episodes we've done.
Yeah, it's mental. Absolutely. Much appreciated. Big, yeah, it's a lot of fun to do it. And yeah, 150 episodes. Thanks for listening, and thanks, Tom, for co-hosting with me for all these years.
Yeah, here's, like we said before, here's another 150 more. Yeah, but, you know, we'll see. We may go out to bigger and better things someday. Who knows?
And at the very least, if we don't see you in 150 episodes' time, we will see you next week to break down the Seahawks game.
Yeah, so until then, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.